My name is Hussein Walji. I'm currently Vice President of Transportation and Logistics. I work for Wells Fargo & Company. I've been with this company for 38 years now. And I have also served in the community in Minneapolis, which is there's a center that's located in Brooklyn Park called Anjumani Askari, which is an Islamic center for people that have generally come from East Africa, Pakistan, Iran, Iraq, Bosnia, and Afghanistan. And so it's a diverse set of community Muslims that actually attend. And I've been a trustee of Anjumani Askari and a founding member of the organization. I was born in Africa, in Uganda, in the city, capital city, Kampala. And in 1972, when Idi Amin basically asked all of the Asians to leave Uganda, my family was one of the families that was part of that exodus coming out of Uganda. But otherwise, my father was born in Lamu, Kenya. My mother was born in India, and the family had settled for a number of generations, actually, in East Africa. It was a politically dangerous situation at the time because Idi Amin was threatening the Asian community to be treated no different than the Jewish people that were treated in Germany. And so there was a discussion or a talk about putting the Asians that don't leave the country into concentration camps. So we basically had 90 days to decide and leave, and we had to visit several embassies. And so I had applied with several embassies, and U.S. Embassy was among the first embassies that responded to that sort of issues, along with the Canadians and French and English and German. But my family was the very first family, actually, that had applied. In fact, we were the first five families that had applied to move to the U.S. After that incident. So we flew from Kampala and we came to Italy. My wife was expecting at the time our first child. And we ended up in a camp in Naples, Italy, where my daughter was born. In fact, she's also 38 years old now, but she was born in Italy before we migrated to the U.S. Prior to the exodus, I would say that in my 21, 22 years that I were in Uganda, it was an absolutely beautiful experience because the world was too far away from us. There were less to talk about what's happening around the world. There was a number of opportunities in Uganda at the time because Uganda was among one of the richest countries in Africa. And so it was a good opportunity, and it was just wonderful. If it wasn't for political upheavals, I don't think most of the folks that have lived in Africa would ever move anywhere. Minnesota was decided for our family by the Lutheran World Federation. And there were several such organizations, Catholic Relief Funds, Lutheran Social Services, International Red Cross. But my family was sponsored by the Lutheran World Federation, and there were probably about 21 families from Uganda at the time that were sponsored by the Lutheran World Federation. And it was up to the churches that were around the country that had come forward and said we would support and help a refugee from Uganda. So we just happened to end up in Minnesota from 70, 80 degree temperatures to going down all the way down to 35 degree minus temperatures here. Minnesota, well, let me tell you this about Minnesota. Just imagine in 1972, when Minnesotans were really not that much exposed to immigrants coming from outside. Mm-hmm. And but it was a community that was extremely, extremely helpful to me and to my family, particularly the churches that had taken part in the migration. So it was wonderful, and Minnesota has always been known as a state that has a lot of opportunities. It was always known to have one of the best education systems in the country. It is also known for its best medical opportunities in this part of the world. And so while we were not familiar with Minnesota at all, those of us who come from Africa normally were more familiar with Los Angeles or New York, mm-hmm. or Detroit or Miami, but not necessarily Minneapolis or St. Paul. But and one of the questions I had asked to the sponsors at the time when we arrived in New York, so where are you taking us? And I was told that I kept on saying we don't want to go where it's very cold. Take us to a warm place. And they kept on saying that, you know, you're going to a place where you will see a lot of apples, because apples grow in Minnesota, and apples is not something that you find in many parts of East Africa. Mm-hmm. And so they kept on convincing that, no, you're going in a good place, and you'll have a good life there. So generally we were received extremely well in the community. To find Muslims in this part of the state was very, very difficult at the time. Although we had Islamic Center in Dinkytown at the time, and I served and worked at that mosque. It was a small house, and I'm sure it's still there. I haven't been there for a while now, but I was part of the maintenance committee of this center in Dinkytown, and so the numbers were extremely small. Even those of us who had moved from Africa, even among the 20 families that arrived in Minnesota, less than 6 families were really Muslims. And so it was a very it was very challenging. I think we've come a long ways from where we were in 1972 to where we are today. The challenges were having to bring up 3 daughters in this part of the world, particularly at that time when hijab, the wearing of the hijab, as you see Muslim women wear and cover their hair, and dress up modestly. All these were issues at the time. But and even in the schools, this was an issue, because the school, the young children or the university students or colleges or high schools were coming across refugees from Uganda for the first time. Mm-hmm. And for some it was hard to comprehend that we were even from Uganda because of our skin color, mm-hmm. right? If somebody ever looked at me, they would think I'm either from Mexico or I'm from Spain or India. So when we told them that we were from Africa, that was always a challenge. But I think overall it was all about communicating, educating the people, that you are going to spend your time with. You know, things like discrimination, I had never heard of that word, even in Africa, and in Uganda at least, we didn't hear that because it was a very diverse country. Mm-hmm. With even among the Africans or locals, there were more than 40 tribes and 40 different languages in Uganda. But at the same time, there were people from all walks of life, and everybody sort of lived in harmony. And I think those are some of the values that you bring with you, and you are able to appreciate and recognize and implement in your life. Mm-hmm. I have been part of a national organization, which is North America, which is called NASIMCO, which is North American Shia Islamic Muslim Communities in North America, which is a body of communities that have come together as part of an organization called the World Federation, which is based in London. And so the NASIMCO, which was the organization based in North America, is sort of a subsidiary of this World Federation. And the goal was always to establish communities, to help the communities prosper and give them opportunities to be able to practice their faith, at the same time get the opportunity for financial stability. So I have been part of that. I visited just about every community in North America, many in Europe. I do these trips quite often, a couple times a year, where communities will call me and I'll go and speak at those communities in various parts of the world, and give them something to think about. Well, this has been a very rewarding experience. You look at the variety of communities, and we find that there are issues in the upbringing of the families. Of course, that's always been challenging. The youths of the community seem to be needing all kinds of help and assistance from either the elders of the community or the leaders of the community, which is, I think, a very, very critical that we hear and listen to what they have to say. Many times we, even from a religious standpoint or from a cultural standpoint, we bring baggages with us into this part of the country. And then when a child, a growing child, will ask you a question, you tend to bring back how you lived, and you need to keep that there. You're here, and you need to help the youths here. It's all about how we prepare the youths here today and going forward. There are values, there are sentiments, things like that that we can bring with us. But we need to help the children in this part of the country, in this part of the world, actually, to be able to live as Muslims and be proud of that. I'm part of a community that I feel very good that, with the help of God, we were able to put an excellent community together. This is the only community, really, that has a mosque, that has a special building designed for children going to school. And, you know, while we have Islamic Center and a lot of other Islamic organizations here, but we were also able to put together one of the largest gymnasium that is found in Muslim communities, actually. And so it's a well-established community. We were five families then in 72. Today we are more than 110 families. Mm-hmm. Who are part of this. And it has been very rewarding, very, very satisfying to see that an institution was put together. Mm-hmm. because as we know, when the migration started from Kenya, from Zaire, and from Iraq and other places, they came to a place basically where everything was there now, mm-hmm. for them to come in and be part of that community. One of the items that I had brought up as a Muslim and someone I was interviewed in the year 2003 by New York Times, and the reason was is that they were looking at what is the situation of the elderlies, people who are senior citizens and have passed the age of 65. How is the Muslim community going to deal with this situation as generation gets older and older? What facilities are out there? What can we do as Muslims? And I think this is a very, very critical issue in my mind, that the Muslim community at large needs to seriously look at. In Islam, nobody can be a burden on anyone. Islam teaches respects that we should have for our parents and how we should help them at the time when they need your help. So it's all about trying to provide facilities that where the elders can spend the last 10, 15, 20, whatever number of years in a best possible way, with integrity and with honors, and to facilitate ways where we can help the Muslim communities, especially those who end up in nursing homes and things like that, assisted living. How can we help this, and how are we preparing as Muslims across the U.S. and in Canada, particularly in the U.S., how are we going to deal with this situation? Because this situation is not going to get any better. And it's not all about, we live in a society where husband and wife both go to work, children go to work. We don't have the kind of facilities we had in Africa where we could have somebody working at your home and you can afford to have them, and so they can look after the elderly. So we have to look this in a long term and see how we can help and facilitate that. And it's not all about building nursing homes. It's working with current nursing homes to be able to see what can we do to help the nursing homes as well as the elderlies of the Muslim communities. How can they live in peace and harmony? There was a Muslim actually who had invested money in Minnesota and had started a nursing home, but it was a nursing home for all. It wasn't exclusively, but it was catering to the needs of the Muslims in general. And so we know it's happening. As far as the global impact, what happens outside? Anytime there's a political upheaval, whether it's the war in Iraq or Iran or Pakistan or terrorism or whatever you want to call it, whenever there is issues out there, they come to you. Of course, they will always follow you wherever you are. But it's all about explaining to people, you can't control the media. That is not something we can control. So things are going to be out there. But I think it's up to us then to take the situation and make the best of it. We didn't come here until the situation was really bad in Uganda. So having gone through those adversities, this is just another challenge that we have and our generations are going to have in North America. But overall, I think I feel that those who may not appreciate Muslims in general in this part of the world are in minority. Majority of the people do understand. Even in 9/11, when 9/11 happened, it was amazing how the churches in this part of the state, how your friends that you had been with, co-workers, your companies that you work for, how forward they came really to assist all of us that were going through a huge trauma at the time, and but it was amazing how everybody came together to help you out.